You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Matt Migaki, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians. We talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. If you've ever wanted to sneak backstage and share a beer with one of your favorite musicians, well, Vox and Hops is the podcast for you. This week on the podcast, I had an amazing conversation with Morgan Lander and SJ Jones about Kitty Pig. There is this episode and over 450 other ones to help you enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. So what are you waiting for? It's time to become a Vox and Hops head. Cheers!
What's good, goat flippers? It's your host, Lurk, here, and thank you for tuning into this episode of the podcast. If this is your first time here, we welcome you to the Van Flip, where we're not your typical Q&A podcast, but rather a relaxed and in-depth conversation into the minds of those involved in the heavy music scene. If you are listening to us on a platform, you can give us a rating. Just go ahead and give us a five-star, thumbs up, or whatever the highest thing is you can. It definitely helps us out in the algorithm of the podcast world. Visit lambgoat.com to stay up to date on news, releases, and announcements from around the hardcore and metal world. Follow Lambgoat on social media. Give us a like on Facebook and follow Lambgoat on both Twitter and Instagram at Lambgoat. Ooh, also big announcement here. We finally started a Twitter account to better interact with all of you all directly. Go follow at VanFlipPodcast. Tweet us what you think of the show or the next guest we should have on. If you are interested in watching podcasts instead of listening, all our episodes are available on our Lambgoat YouTube channel. So subscribe and make sure you get notified when new episodes are released. I would like to take a quick second to thank our Patreon supporters, Dylan and Lachlan. Thank you for supporting the Van Flip. You guys are awesome. If you would like to become a Patreon supporter too, not only would you help improve and grow the show, but you also get early access to episodes before they are released, an invite to the private Discord chat, some Lambgoat swag, and more. And heck, we'll even give you a shout out on the show for as long as you are a supporter. Visit patreon.com/thevanflip for more info. On this episode of the Van Flip podcast, we have Connie Scarbosa, vocalist of the up-and-coming Pure Noise Records band, See You Space Cowboy.
Oh yeah, what's this? I feel this. Oh yeah, this is Oh no, come here. Oh no, no, no! Lambgoat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
That's good. All right. I'm not going to, like, try to murder your last name.
Scarbosa.
Yeah, so actually, why don't you just go ahead and introduce yourself?
All right. I'm Connie Scarbosa from See You Space Cowboy.
Yo. You guys are from California.
We are indeed from California, yes.
And you kind of are a relatively recent band in general, in conception, as well as being signed, so that you guys formed in 2014, 15, something like that?
We formed like October 2016.
2016, yeah. I was a little off then.
Yeah. We were like tail end 2016, and then we started out as like a different band kind of, and then there's this whole two projects thing, and one project was like a 7-piece grind band, like influenced by the Locust and like Sawtooth Grin. And this band couldn't exist anymore, so we took this band and like merged them and became See You Space Cowboy, 5-piece band.
So what was the other vibe, the other band vibe?
So it was more, it's probably way more like scene. We had like southern riffs.
Okay.
We were like way more unapologetic in like what we did. There's a lot, we did like gang vocals and shit.
Yeah, because you can, I mean, listening to you guys' new release that you guys just dropped a month ago.
What?
Plug. Yeah, so you can go check that out. But listening to that one, you can definitely tell, like, they're you know, callbacks to, like, the Daughters and the Locusts and all that kind of spazcore stuff. And you guys label yourself as, like, a sasscore band.
See, we...
Whatever that means, if you want to go ahead and explain
it. So the whole thing with that is, like, the first 2 years of this band, like, everything that's on Songs for the Firing Squad... we very much like embraced that like sassy, spazzy, 3-1-G, MySpace grind shit. And we did that all through the 2 years. Did like Fashion Saves of Socially Aware, we did a split, we did a single. And when Pure Noise came to us to release it, they wanted to re-release all that shit on a comp. We did our two last songs. We kind of looked at that as like that was like a coffin. We had like done like the whole sceney weeny spazzy MySpace thing for a while. We're kind of done with it. So it was like, we called the album Songs for the Firing Squad because it was like, that's what it is. Like that era of
a last
fell off. Yeah, it's like, that's it. We put those songs against the wall. We put that style against the wall. And then so with Correlations, the correlation between Entrance and Exit Wounds, we wanted to explore more of the old OG metalcore, like Poison the Well, Zayo, Beloved, Hope's Fall, and Seven Angels, Seven Plagues, because we're honestly just fucking bored. And 29 Scene became a thing, and we've hated it. We were just like, we've been doing this for years. What the fuck? What are you talking about? This is a thing. It's been a thing. We've been doing it. So then we kind of just decided to like put that all in the coffin and do a new style because we were all very depressed. I was a drug addict and alcoholic while that album was being made. So it was like sad. Space Cowboy used to be happy, fun time. And now Space Cowboy's sad.
But is that like the avenue that you guys are going for going forward? As far as like, it's not sad vibes, but
no,
like,
I found that like, exploring this new avenue of like more cathartic, straightforward lyrics, like instrumentals that are not as just crazy, artsy, masturbatory shit, which I loved it. I still love it. I still love Daughters. I still love Sawtooth Grin. I still love Drop Dead Gorgeous. I still love the Blood Brothers. I still love Red Hot and Red Light Sting. But it just doesn't do it for me anymore. I want something more expressive.
I get you. But those bands that you're naming are also like the ones that kind of started the whole situation.
Yeah, those were.
And then the bands that came after them kind of milked.
Yeah,
the,
they
that
milked
sound,
it more
so,
and more. I mean, so yeah.
But I get you. What you're saying about like how you feel about not wanting.
It just it matches more with our current life. We're bored. It's just like, yeah, why not take this new thing we have? We like it. People like it. Just run with it. It's the writing the lyrics and doing the vocals for Correlations was like the most cathartic thing I've ever had in my life. I like almost died during recording it, so I was like, this is perfect. This is like what I need right now. I need more of this. This is the expression. This is why I do music. I need this release. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that'll continue moving forward.
So you almost died.
I almost died because...
Dive into that a little bit.
So we wrote the instrumentals for the record in Philly in like late November. Coming back from that tour, my ex-girlfriend, who I was really close with, I'd been living with her and everything, committed suicide. So it sent me like spiraling into this just terrible depression. I just like thought about killing myself all the time. I was like burning myself with cigarettes. I was doing any substance I could get my hands on. I was blackout drunk every night, like barely making it to recording, like passing out during recording. I even missed two full days of recording because I got so fucked up. I blacked out, and my current girlfriend was so worried she paid for me to Uber from San Diego to Los Angeles because she was like so worried for me. Yikes. Which is like a $200 Uber.
Yeah, it's a long way.
So I missed 2 days recording. So like, yeah, it was just the worst time of my life while I was recording this very expressive, crazy thing to me. So it just worked really well for like what I was feeling at that time. I'm a lot better now. Thankfully, I'm not as I drink Red's Wicked. But I'm a lot better now than I was before. So it was a very, very dark time. And I'm glad. And like kind of when the album came out, it was like this big like release. It was like, oh, the album's out. This part of my life is over.
Done. Yeah.
It's like done. And well, I can move forward.
A lot of that is good for like songwriting.
It is.
Just like recording in general because like you get to vault up that feeling for the most part. And even though you move on, it's still there technically in the music and whatnot, and you can always, if you wanted to, like,
it's a remnant. That album acts as like a memorial. It acts like the song Late December in the video, that's kind of my memorial to Natalie. And all the songs on there about mental illness or addiction or anything like that, that's all my memorial to that time in my life. I still struggle with it, but it kind of is nice when you feel helpless to at least be able to put it into something that you can listen to or even see. And
the lyrical content beforehand was just more of like a...
It was
your standard typical
song
stuff.
It was super tongue-in-cheek, political stuff, because we were a very political band back in the day. So, like, everything I did, even the name Fashion Statements of the Socially Aware, was a jab at how popular it had become to be PC, mm-hmm. but none of these people really believed in it or backed it or would do anything about it, whereas, like, I came from the hardcore left scene and anarchist collective since I was, you know, 15.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of tongue-in-cheek, kind of a lot of metaphors, me just having fun. Like, my biggest influences were, like, Aesop Rock and Kevin Barnes from Montreal. So super cryptic, super fun, tongue-in-cheek. And now it's all depressing. This is how I feel. Because that's what I need.
Well, you're also, like, older and things become different in general. Yeah. And, like, you start feeling other, like, real-world shit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, and back then it was very much writing about, like, things that, like, problems I saw. Not internally, but problems I saw with, like, society. And nowadays it's like, no, I need this for myself. No, mm-hmm. Sorry to everybody who liked my tongue-in-cheek political shit, but like, I need this for me now.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like my response to anybody who's upset about like us changing our vibe. Because I get it's a big shift from Songs for Fight and Squad to Correlations, but I need this right now. This is for me.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, and I mean, you can always dabble in both at some point later on if you really wanted to get cheeky
and
with it.
Even then, Correlations has some sassy bits. It's got some weird shit on it still. Like, sorry it's not enough, but we tried to retain some of, because we still love that shit. We just don't want to play it as much anymore.
I feel you. You mentioned MySpace and like used that kind of like as a genre, which is interesting because like I can kind of get that. Were you old enough to, like, be on MySpace or, to, like...
I had one for a little bit, yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't, like, super embedded in it.
Right.
But I, like, very much recognized that era of music that was fueled by MySpace.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that was bands. One of those cool inventions that came... Especially for, like, I think hardcore music as an umbrella term. In general, it was big for us because, you know, a lot of bands were able to put their music on that and then share it with their friends right away and find new people, but... That's interesting you use it as like a genre kind of term.
You think about it like when the way we always categorize shit is like, there's those bands that weren't necessarily seen metalcore. There's bands like Heavy Heavy Lolo, Hayworth, Duck Duck Goose.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't like that typical metalcore.
Those names are like so old.
I know. But you associate them with an era of like MySpace grindy shit. It was like, it was weird still. It wasn't marketable. It was this crazy off the wall shit that existed on this site.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of like, it's a good way to just encompass that, to like differentiate from like the Devil Wears Prada. It's like, no, it's MySpace grind.
Yeah, I get you. And plus, again, I think grindcore was becoming like something that the masses could get their hands on because of stuff like MySpace. Because it is a niche genre still.
Oh, yeah, still.
But it was even more niche, I think, before MySpace and stuff.
I mean, there's a revival of it now.
Well, The Daughters came back and Locusts are coming back.
Yeah, Locusts are coming back. And it's cool.
The first Daughters album I bought, Canada Songs.
That was great album.
Yeah, it was 16 minutes long, and I was like, "Yo, they fucked up my CD." But it actually was 16 minutes long, and it wasn't. You know what I mean? I was like, "Oh, I get it now."
That's another funny thing.
I get it now.
Space Cowboy never wrote a song like over 2 minutes really before. And then Correlations has 4.5 minute song on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, when you evolve and stuff like that too. I mean, like Daughters obviously did that too.
They, of course.
They're long songs.
Yeah, they're way different than self-titled or anything like that.
So you were saying about your like scene that you came from, the hardcore left or whatever. Whatever. It's weird to say like hardcore left because like it could be construed.
You know,
as, like,
I like to very much separate myself from like the liberal left, which then yes, I'm very far left.
Mm-hmm. How has like because you're relatively new band in general. How many bands were you in before?
Before the last band that you were in before
CU Space Cowboy?
When I was, like, in three? In high school, I played... I was, like, very much probably, like, the late 90s, early 2000s screamo scene. Like, Orchid, Drums, Dream, all those bands, Tristan Zara. And also, like, the whatever revival, Twinkle Revival, William Bonney and stuff. So I played in a lot of those bands. Space Cowboy was the first band I've ever played in that's outside of that genre. Like, this was my, like, departure... Like, when I started this band, originally I wanted it to be, like, a melodic hardcore band like The Carrier.
Okay.
Killing the Dream. So, like, this band is the first one I ever departed from, like, that scene of, like, that really underground screamo shit. So I did that, and when I was, like, in high school, too, I, like, helped run the Che Cafe in San Diego.
Okay.
So I'd like get out of school or on the weekends, I'd take a bus or have somebody drive me to go volunteer and run shows at this vegan anarchist collective that's been there since like the fucking 70s.
Right, okay.
So like, and
so it's like a venue. So
yeah, it's like it's a venue / info shop. So we would do zine tables, we would do like educational events, and we'd do a lot of fucking shows.
Cool.
And like really like crafted me as like a person, like my like politics that I still hold true to today.
Mm-hmm.
It was like very influential for me as a kid.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're surrounding yourself with that at a young age.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely can like, you know, permeate your being and whatnot. So I think I read somewhere that your dad was into punk rock too.
Yeah, my adoptive dad was like in like the skate the booming skate industry and punk scene in the 80s. So like he like was one of the first people to work at Airwalk. He started Power Edge magazine.
Oh, cool.
So he's like very much embedded. He's the one who like in elementary school showed me like all those 80s hardcore bands and like started me on the trek I am now.
Yeah, like, you seem like even though you're quite not, I don't want to say quite young, but you're young. I mean, you seem to know a lot about like bands that were out 15, 20 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, I mean, I've always had a penchant. Until currently with the modern hardcore and metalcore scene, I'd never even really cared about modern bands that much. It was because it was always, you know, like my dad and my mom showing me 80s hardcore bands or like 90s trip hop bands and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So I always had a pension, and then once it wasn't that, it was then like, yeah, late 90s, early 2000s screamo, like
yeah.
The most underground you fucking get. Mm-hmm. That was always like the thing I liked. I liked modern indie rock, like grew up listening like Interpol and Bloc Party and shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that was my thing was always like, yeah, diving into the past was always interesting. I have skate zines from the fucking 80s and 90s. They're
cool.
Old as shit, but they're super fucking cool.
I feel like we are aligned a lot on the music. Yeah. Because, like, you're dated a little bit, but...
I am. I mean, and that's not to say I don't love modern music.
I'm not saying that as a negatory thing either. But.
I love trap. I love fucking SoundCloud rap. I mean, I like what I like, and it just doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I mean, also, again, I also like those things. So, trust me, I feel you on that. It's a fun little vibe, you know?
It is. It's great. It's a great time. I mean, when I lived in Oakland, I wasn't even part of the hardcore scene for like a year. I just hung out with like graffiti kids and like went to like underground raves and like abandoned buildings.
Yeah, both those things, all those things that you said are my scene.
Yeah, it's great. It's fun. It was nice to like step away from like my usual shit and just be like, I'm just going to hang out with these kids and party.
Yeah.
This is dope.
I'm going to do some hood rat things.
Yeah.
Hood rat
friends. I'm going to do a lot of drugs. I'm going to go party in some abandoned massage parlor that's got crazy lights and a DJ, and maybe we'll get kicked out. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. I've lived a lot of those nights. So how did, like, you said your stepdad, your adopted dad or whatnot, kind of like put your parents put you on that kind of music. Like, how did that influence you growing up as far as like just being, because I mean, like, you're around, you're listening to a lot of like 80, if you're listening to 80 hardcore, that's like way early shit.
Yeah, it definitely kind of like separated me from a lot of the people I knew.
Because so, it's not your typical, like, oh, my dad listens to Aerosmith or Radio Rock. You know what I'm saying?
It's not normal to be in like fifth, sixth, seventh grade and be like, y'all heard about Minor Threat? You heard about Massive Attack? You like Underworld? You know, it's like, it's trying to like vibe with people about like trip hop and mm-hmm. hardcore is like weird when you're young. But eventually I like, you know, I kind of hung out with metalheads and shit, and I eventually converted some of them to like being like, yo, we're all fucking skate punks. We're going to skate like fucking 1983. Let's go skate some bowls. And that's what we did.
Yeah.
So we made homemade Black Flag shirts and we went and skated bowls.
Dope.
You know?
Skateboarding is like pretty Californian too.
Oh yeah. I skated. I surfed a shit ton back in the day.
Interesting.
Me and my little brother, who's the guitarist of Space Cowboy, we were very much embedded in that culture. Very California when we were growing up.
Very California.
And then when I turned 18, graduated, I bounced my ass to San Francisco as soon as I could.
How was that?
It was great.
You were living like Southern Cal.
Yeah, I was in San Diego, and then I had a girlfriend who was going to college in San Francisco, and she was like, you want to come up with me? I'm like, fuck yeah, get me out of San Diego, please. So I kind of like, I'd never been to San Francisco ever.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I saw the city was when I moved there.
Wow.
I went there with like no money, and just kind of made it work.
That's kind of like how like a lot of people I think go to
San
Francisco. Yeah,
it was that. It was definitely that romanticized idea that like San Francisco had in like the 60s and 70s, kind of playing out in whatever 2013, with like moving into a one bedroom apartment that's $2,500 with five people to make it work.
I always felt like I've been to California, but I've never been to San Francisco. I always felt like that would be a city if I ever showed up, I'd probably not want to leave. Because the arts and the culture is
my favorite
place
in the whole world. The art and the culture is cool. I love Oakland more for that because it's cheaper.
It's close in proximity.
Yeah, too. It's close. It's a 20-minute BART ride, so you're there instantly. But it's way cooler because people can afford to live there. It's a bunch of warehouses. People are doing cool shit over there. San Francisco is really expensive, hard to survive in.
It's like very techy now.
Yeah, it is.
Tech companies are headed there.
But Oakland is where the shit is definitely happening. That's where all the artists are coming out of. That's where all the music's coming out of. That's where all the parties are. Because it's Oakland used to be one of the most dangerous cities in the fucking world. I mean, not the world, the country.
Yeah.
It still is very run down and shit, but, you know, we can afford to live there.
Yeah, and I think, like, the best in a lot of things as far as, like, the arts are concerned come out of, like, very impoverished or like low income or poor regions
definitely.
For the most part, because the struggle is part of that. Hey, can you get me another beer? Appreciate you, bro.
Yeah, it definitely is because, unless you're like one of those fucking trust fund kids, you don't have a lot of money.
Right. I mean, most people don't.
Yeah. And if you want to create, you need somewhere cheap to live. And if that means you got to live in the hood, You got to do that and be respectful, of course, to people who've lived there forever. You don't want to come in there and be like, I'm going to fucking change everything about this neighborhood.
Gentrification?
Like, yeah, gentrification. No. You go there, you show respect to the people around you, and you do your thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool. And that's why I love Oakland, because it is this big mix of, like, cultures. And it's really, really nice to, like, have everything come together. You have like fucking like super weird artsy queer kids mixing in with like very hood graffiti artists, but everybody's friends because we're all just kicking it together.
Is that
to make
not
it.
Like I think I like kind of picture in my head California like that all over, not just in Oakland.
No, because see, I mean, like there's parts, but San Diego is a very rich area. There's like inland parts that historically have not been.
I just feel like there's a lot of groups of people that live in California.
Yes. Yeah.
There should be all meshing together.
Yeah, that's
kind of
how
in
it
my
is.
Perfect world head, you know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
I mean, even in like hardcore and like in San Diego, like, yeah, you have a huge Mexican population. You have a huge population. You even have kids coming from like rich white neighborhoods mixing up with like, you know, impoverished kids from other parts of town. Like,
we're always gonna have that.
Yeah, you're always gonna have that. But that's the beauty of hardcore, is it brings all these different groups together. And that's what it's for, because we all have we all struggle differently, but we all have this central love for this music, and we all have like ideas of what we are against and what we're for. And they mesh together so well. And you can do that with other groups of people, other communities. It doesn't just have to be, you have to love hardcore for me to fuck with you. Like, I don't think that's silly.
It used to be like that.
I'm glad it's not anymore. I'm glad it's not anymore.
No, I do remember a time where, like, it wasn't as cool to listen to, like, Brand New or Taking Back Sunday if you were listening to, like, hardcore.
Yeah, but nowadays, listen to what the fuck you want. I mean,
we're all secretly doing it.
Yeah,
okay.
And that's kind of what was cool about the whole, like, when this band came out. I don't want to say that, I'm not going to sit here and be like, we were a movement, but it was really funny to see all these hardcore kids being like, yo, I fucked with Heavy Heavy Lolo back in the day. I love y'all. This is sick.
Yeah.
And it was really cool to see that. I was kind of just like, yeah, we can like whatever the fuck we want. And still be in the hardcore scene. It doesn't make us any less fucking down for it or anything like that, just because we all love scene music back in the day.
I feel at some point, hardcore, or like, when I say hardcore, I just mean like the genre, the scene in general. I feel like that scene really perpetuated the kind of like jokey music where like you have like Arsonist Get the Girl or anything like that. All those kinds of bands that were just like spazcore, jokey type bands. But I feel like that also in itself blossomed like a whole legit kind of genre
it
based on the jokes.
You know
what I mean?
It's fun. I mean, even like we used to have fucking disco beats in our songs. It was fun.
Yeah.
It was a good time. And you know what? People would be out there trying to two-step the parts. You can't really two-step, but, you know, they're having a good fucking time trying. Yeah, and yeah. I love that. And it was sick. And it, that's what kind of drew me to that initially. It was like, this is fun. Doing sassy vocals instead of screaming all the time, that's fun. Not so much more fun anymore, but, you know, back in the day, it was like, this is great. I love this. This is just fun music. This is just something you want to, like, shout woo and, like, have a good time to. Mm-hmm. And while also punching your friends in the face with breakdown hits, you know? And so I think that, like, that was the merit of the genre. It was very experimental. It was very fun. And I love it for it.
Yeah, it's weird to see, like, how it's evolved since, like, well, I call it the prime, but it's probably not. I think hardcore metal and metalcore and all that shit, I think it's coming back a lot right now.
Oh, yeah.
But I think for a long time, there was like a very big lull, and I call it the golden time, like, you know, 2000 or 2006 or some shit. Mm. Even before that, for like metalcore at least, but hardcore in general was wildly popular in that time frame too.
Yeah.
But I think like it's good to see like the creativity that's come from out of the lull.
Yeah.
Because for a while there, a lot of bands were sounding like a lot alike. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just kind of like kind of copy and paste and shit.
I feel like that's just how art goes in general, though. You have this reinvention. You have this thing where something new comes along and this is cool. Everybody's going to start taking from it. And it's going to happen to this whole metalcore revival too.
Yeah.
Eventually this shit will become very stale.
Yeah. It'll just become regurgitated again and again.
People will find something else to draw from, and that'll be the new thing.
Who's the new Limp Bizkit?
See, new metal's going to come back. I'm calling it right now.
I think new metal's coming back.
I think it is. I think it is. And
not in a bad way. I don't think it was a good way.
I think it's sick. I mean, I hear bands taking influence from Deftones, and that's fucking dope.
I kind of get a little new metal vibe from Knock Loose. In a weird way. They're heavy.
They are heavy. I could see maybe in some of the like the non-heavy parts they play, some of the other the shit that fills in spaces.
Yeah,
maybe like, a little bit of that.
There's a nuance, like kind of like how Pantera has like slow guitar parts sometimes. I feel like they have like slower guitar parts too. And again, I'm not saying it as a negative thing. I love that band and this, that, the other, but I just get that they're a new metalcore kind of sound. But I feel like they also pull from, you know, like Slipknot.
Yeah,
fucking
I feel like you could,
heavy
like,
corn. You know what I mean?
Pick from everything. I don't think there's anything wrong with picking from genres that you like.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anything wrong with being like, I play this genre of music, but I'm gonna pick from this over here and this over here because I like this shit. No problem. I think it's great. I think that if you like something, you should try to incorporate it in your art if you want.
Yeah.
No matter what, like what consequences.
Well, that's what we were talking about with the creativity. I'm surprised a lot of the creativity that happens just in general, even if they're not going like way out of their way, bands going way out of their way. It's just interesting to see what they come up with.
Yeah.
It's interesting to find out the band's influences and this or the other.
I think it's fun. And my only gripe with it is, and this is a gripe against old Space Cowboy as well, is when you're just like taking something and not we tried to do things in different ways. Like, yeah, we had Dada's parts, but we had breakdowns, blah, 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 whatever. When you just are a carbon copy of an old thing, I feel like that's when you lose that. You don't have any ingenuity to what you're doing. And, I'm not saying, because I love Jesse. Jesse writes great music. I'm not saying that Old Space Cowboy was just a regurgitation, but, like, it's a fine line to walk, you know? It's
also your first stab at it.
Yeah. I mean, and, like, it could be a growing process, but that's, like, my one gripe with revivals is when you're just a pure carbon copy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, where's the reinvention? Nostalgia's great, but what are you adding to it?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
It's also to be said, though, if you're doing some kind of cut and paste carbon copy stuff, if you kind of approach it in a different way, like kind of with sampling and stuff like that, you know, like just how songs, they take an old song, they sample it, and they kind of make it into a newer song, newer version.
And then that shit's great. I mean, like, Venetian Snares did a great remix of Gloomy Sunday by Billie Holiday. And, yeah, like, he takes the fucking the vocals, and he takes some instrumentation, but he does it in this crazy way that's so fresh. It gave me a new appreciation for that song as well. Mm-hmm. I loved Billie Holiday before, but after I heard that, I'm like, okay, this is sick, and it gives me this appreciation for how Billie Holiday did it herself.
Yeah, exactly. Alex keeps texting me. He got the comments.
Got the comments?
But we'll get to that later. But speaking of Lamb Goat, our comment section is now almost completely renovated.
Under new management.
Nah, same management. New style.
New style. New outfits.
Yeah. So I'm not 100% sure, but I think you have to have a Facebook to comment now on our post.
No, all hell's about to break loose if anybody actually comments.
Yeah, you were bummed about that a little bit.
I am bummed. I find it entertaining as fuck.
It is entertaining. But it's also like a whole thing.
I get why. I get why it doesn't exist anymore, because I know that not everyone thinks like me and finds it entertaining. Right. Not everyone can laugh at themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's definitely a plus. Thick skin is good, especially if you're going to be on Lamb Goat.
Look, that's the one thing I've learned about being trans, you gotta have thick skin.
Yeah, I would assume so. That's something I wanted to bring up too, and I was trying to find a way to bring it up. We were talking about the hardcore scene, which was a good way, but you just brought it up too, so let's ride your coattails. How was, like, just being trans coming up in the hardcore scene in general? Like,
it was.
Is that something that you started prior to Space Cowboy?
It was.
Or is
it
something that you did afterwards?
So, when I was in high school, I never, like, felt, like, right. I always, like, felt, like, a little off being, like, fronting as, like, this guy. So, like, I was, like, I would compensate. So, I was, like, this hyper-masculine dude. I would, like, I had, like, an 8-pack. I was jacked. I would fucking take my shirt off any chance I could. I was aggressive as fuck.
Were you those, like, guys in the pit?
Yeah, exactly. I was one of them. And then towards later high school, I kind of started to, like, embrace this, like, more queer style. I came out like, okay, y'all, like, I like boys too. Like, I'm queer. And I started wearing, like, tight, small red corduroy vests and, like, flower printed, like, jeggings as tight as I could find. I started, like, kind of embracing this other side of me that I always wanted. Later on, when I moved to San Francisco, I came out as trans. I was like, I'm non-binary. It's kind of still, like, trying to figure out who I was. Wasn't quite sure. Wasn't confident enough to come out as a woman. The scene I was in, the Screamo scene, was super supportive of that. When Space Cowboy started, you know, everybody's cool with it, of course, and I finally came out as a woman, and we were still in the Screamo scene when Space Cowboy first started. We hadn't, like, broken into the hardcore scene or whatever, but when we did, I was a little nervous. I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. like, how is this going to be taken? And it's been great. I haven't had to deal with anything from anyone. Everyone's super supportive, super cool about it. I haven't had any problems.
I feel like, well, obviously California is a little more progressive than most states in the country. Yeah. But I feel like I always felt like the hardcore scene was very open in general, even though there are those kind of, like, aggro dudes.
It is. I mean, it is super open in general. And I definitely had a false perception of, like, the more, like, not the less hardcore that I used to, like, the youth crew and, like, the old bands, but, like, the more, like, hardcore scene now is, like, mm-hmm. breakdowns heavy, blah, blah, blah. I definitely had this perception that I was kind of worried, but once we actually, like, were kind of, like, kicked into that scene, it was great. Yeah. Everyone's fantastic. Everything's been cool. Life's been great since then.
Yeah, it's weird. It's been weird as, like, a person that's been in the scene to see it grow and be so accepting of just everything that's mm-hmm. been going on. Because there was a time, and again, it could be specific to my area that I grew up in, obviously, in this North Florida area. But, like, I remember when it was predominantly just, like, white dudes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then you would see, like, some girls start trickling in. Yeah. And, like, some black dudes would start coming in. And then, like, now it's just, like, everyone.
Yeah.
Like, it's so different.
It is really cool. I mean, I feel like...
And again, that's different probably for me and you, because have such a different mixing pot.
Growing up in San Diego, definitely, there was way more of a presence of people of color. But, I mean, yeah, that's the cool thing is, like, nowadays, like, yeah, the hardcore scene is very diverse, and it's sick. Because with diversity comes a bunch of different perspectives. Voices from different backgrounds. Voices with different experiences mm-hmm. all coming together to tell different stories that we haven't really heard before. And I feel like that keeps it interesting.
Yeah.
And it gives people an outlet, because that's what hardcore is. It's an outlet for whatever we feel.
Yeah.
Whatever we want to let out. It's why we do it. I doubt anybody's in hardcore for the fucking money, because there's no money here.
Exactly.
I'll tell you that. So we just do it for that catharsis. And yeah. It's really nice that we can hear different stories from different people, different yeah. backgrounds.
And your background story and your story in going forward is also unique and not super well documented. There's not a lot of like front people
yeah.
that, you know, that go yeah. through that transition.
And you got Laura Jangris, and that's about it. In like the big public eye, you know?
Against me?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's basically, we were trying to run down the gamut of like who's done that.
Yeah.
And I'm
hard pressed to find many people. I mean, I know hardcore bands that are fronted by trans women, and they're sick. Mm-hmm. Transgression's fucking dope. Yeah, it is kind of a new thing, and it's kind of cool. I'm really curious to see how it goes.
Yeah.
Been going good so far.
Yeah, because like you basically you're more accepted, or you're more likely to be accepted for that in your home state in general, just again because of everything. But
yeah,
you've been cool, like middle America type shit.
Yeah, I mean, not people at gas stations, no. Yeah. But in the hardcore scene, yes, everybody's been really cool about it.
Yeah, you can already tell. Yeah, the gas station locals are definitely going to be some situations.
But no, everyone else, yeah, I have not run into any. I haven't had to fight anybody yet. I've had to fight people not in the hardcore scene, but mm-hmm. nobody in the hardcore scene, no.
Do you have to like check a lot of people though?
Like, no, actually, no.
Do people know?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the way I present is pretty indicative. They know. I mean, I play without a shirt on, wearing a bra most of the times. So I was like, no. I feel like it's pretty well known. So I haven't had to check anyone know in the hardcore scene, at least now.
Right. Yeah, I feel like, again, it's always been super uber accepting for the most part.
Yeah.
But again, you do have those weird... hardcore and heavy music gets such a bad rap.
For a because few.
Yeah, a and, few it, people and it seen. Looks very violent. The whole scene looks very violent.
Look,
you know?
I like the violence. I crowd kill people.
Well, it's not trying... Yeah.
I love it. I know that there's a big criticism of it. And like, I know... I even have like... other people who are queer and shit being like, we shouldn't participate in this. It's so macho. And I'm like, well, fuck you. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I like doing it. I love moshing. It's...
Are you ever worried about being like more of a target out there? Well, no. Again, that would be in the,
yeah,
in the genre and the scene that doesn't accept you.
Even if I was, I got so many people who have my fucking back.
Yeah,
so, like,
right.
Who cares? Like, if anybody swung on me, they would die.
Yeah, interesting. Well, so you haven't had to have any horrible situations?
No,
then.
No.
How's the current tour going with Stick to Your Guns? You're on tour with Stick
yeah,
to Your Guns.
Yeah, Knock
rotting
Loose,
out
Rotting
candy
Out
Candy,
yeah. It's been
loose.
Amazing. It's been phenomenal. The response, I was really worried because you never know with tours. You never know if it's going to be like, you're the open band, nobody gives a shit about you, blah, blah, blah. But every night it's been insane.
I heard, I don't know where this guy is located, but the punk rock NBA.
Yeah,
he was
Seattle.
Seattle.
Yeah, Finn yeah, McKenzie.
He mentioned that even the opening band. I don't know. Are you the guys the
yeah.
opening band?
Yeah,
okay,
we're
I didn't
we're
know
opening.
The set lineup, but even you guys played to a packed house.
Yeah, I mean that's how it's been. It's been amazing, and yeah, Finn McKenzie's a good dude. Talked to him for a long time at that show, but yeah, it's been crazy. We, like I said, we kind of came in here prepared for disaster just in case, but we've been blown away every show. It's just been insane.
Yeah, it might be. I mean, it must be a good feeling to be a part of this particular tour
yeah.
and like open up with like a substantial crowd.
Yeah, I mean, it's sick. We're like super grateful to be part of it, and we're friends with all the Knock Loose guys, and we're really glad that they took us out. Yeah, it's probably been one of the best tours we've ever done, honestly.
How many tours have you done?
A lot. A lot of tours.
Because you've only been signed for...
We were touring before we were signed.
You normally do, yeah.
Yeah, yeah we... Yeah. I mean... Yeah,
but, like, what kind of tours were you guys doing
before you got signed? Well,
just like
while we were
band?
Going through the signing process, we did our first full US ever. We did a DIY... me and the guitarist booked every fucking... It was 43 days, and we booked every date ourselves.
That's some MySpace shit right there.
Yeah, it was sick. It was kind of, like, funny how it lined up with, like, we were on our first full US tour, also talking about being signed and shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we did a lot of tours. We did a lot of, like, West Coast tours, like, 2 weeks before that and shit.
Did did you ever go out with like bands though? Like not like this particular package, but like did you ever go out with bands?
Yeah,
like,
we were
did
like
the U.S. tour. Did you go out with a band?
Oh no, we did that solo.
Yeah,
But like before, like yeah, we'd like hit up, we'd go out with our friends' bands and shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And have some like you know.
By tours, I meant like tour, like yeah, the package, yeah. Not necessarily like.
Before we got like an agent and shit, no, we didn't do many like support tours or anything. Yeah. Like that. It was more like, hey, we're going on tour. You want to jump on a few days? Like, yeah, we're homies. Good shit.
Do you miss the DIY shit?
I do a lot.
That's what I thought.
I think
I get this DIY vibe from
yeah.
You.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I like the big stages, like the monitors. It's fun. I like the big crowds, but I do also like have a big place in my heart still for small shows and small DIY spaces or venues and shit. Like yeah. After shows we've played or off days, I've been sick. So yeah, I'll always like, I love both worlds.
Yeah, it's a give and take.
Yeah, it definitely
is. It's a big give and take.
It's a less intimate experience for like a more theatrical experience. You know?
Yep.
So I kind of like switching back and forth. And we're still in a place where we can do that. It's like we can play these sold out shows Knock Loose, or we can still go play an off day in some like somewhere and like play a small show in a warehouse to like fucking like 50-200 yeah. kids, you know.
What do you prefer? Like just for your performance wise.
I like the personally, small shows.
Yeah, yeah.
I vibe with the crowd way more when I'm like on their level and not on a stage that like they have to like sit like this.
So you're talking like you're at a warehouse.
Yeah, I'm at a warehouse. Yeah, and there's like yeah, I like that. I like that more. But like I said, I have a huge appreciation for also playing on stages. It sounds better. I mean, monitors, it's sick.
If you don't like playing like festival type crowds, or
I would be in the wrong place. Yeah. I wouldn't have signed ever. Blah blah blah.
So yeah, I mean, but it is, and again, the give and take is huge, but. Is what it is, you know what I'm saying? If yeah. you want to keep creating your art, you got to play the game.
That's the changing times. And then it was even a big shift for us when we went from being a DIY band to, like, having a booking. Because we got a booking agent and, like, label within, like, a couple months of each other. You know, yeah. It was kind of crazy. It came out of nowhere. Literally got asked by a booking agent the same day we got asked by our first label. We got the first offer from, I'm not going to say the label's name, but yeah. So
did you take that offer?
What?
Did you take the offer?
No.
Okay.
No. It was kind of this crazy thing of like in a day, my whole life changed. It was all of a sudden you have a booking agent and you got label offers. They're coming in. Like within a day, it was like you're not DIY anymore.
How long were you guys a band before this stuff started trickling in?
A year and a half? 2 years maybe?
It's relatively quick.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy.
Yeah. What do you attribute that to? Because there's a lot of bands. I'm just gonna ask because you know a lot of younger bands are they're trying to make it their own way.
Yeah, somebody asked me yesterday on Instagram, "How do you any advice for the music scene?" I'm like, I don't.
Were you
know
just
that
doing
world.
It?
And yeah, then, like, we were just doing it. That yeah. was the thing. We had no plan.
Were you submitting your stuff to like Pure Noise at all?
No, we didn't submit anything to anyone ever. We were just doing it, and like this band wasn't even supposed to be serious. It was supposed to be a joke. I moved to Oakland because. I straight up asked everyone, are we ever going to do anything with this band? Like, nah. Have fun in the Bay. And then all this shit started happening. I started getting on 10-hour mega buses from Oakland to LA a bunch. And then a label offer happened. So, like, yeah, we never did anything. We never wanted to, like, make it. It just kind of just fell in our laps. And we're like, you know what? This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, so I'm going to take it.
Yeah, you got to, like, at least play it out.
Yeah, we're like, we kind of had this serious talk, like, okay, like, this is, like, life-changing. Are we going to do this?
For
like,
sure.
Yeah, we're going to do this. And, you know, some members left during that time. We gained new ones, and so not everybody wanted this. And, yeah, but it was a huge life change for us.
That's cool.
Yeah.
How do you like being with Pure Noise? They seem like a really cool label.
I love right now. I love being with Pure Noise. I mean, the whole team is great. They let us do whatever we want. There's no fucking play this style, look like this, blah blah blah. Because that was always our biggest thing. We always said we'd only sign a label if we had full artistic license.
Mm-hmm.
We never want a label to tell us what we couldn't do, anything like that. So when Pure Noise came along, you know, Jake was like, "I'm a punk. I'm not gonna ever tell you what to do. Y'all make the music." And we're like, sure, let's do it. It's been great so far.
Yeah, it's playing out. So what are the goals going forward for See You Space Cowboy? Big anime fans? You guys big anime fans?
Yeah, sure. I mean, me and Ethan are big anime fans. Me and my little brother.
From, right?
Yeah, it comes from Cowboy Bebop. We were watching Cowboy Bebop earlier. I don't know what the goal... I think at this point, the goal, I mean, it's always to just keep making art, because that's what my whole life has I've revolved around. I don't work a job. I just do designs for bands and shit to, like, I have for years to make my income. So it's just to keep making art. And, like, of course, like, yes, it would be nice to come to a point where Space Cowboy could sustain all of our lives. That would be sick. Mm-hmm. If it happens, it happens. If not, it's fine. I just want to make art. It's like I said, it's what my life revolves. It's always revolved around.
Right.
Just either whether it's physical art, art for bands, or music.
That's cool. So not everybody in the band is into anime, though?
No.
No?
Nope. It's mostly me and my little brother, Ethan.
Okay. I honestly don't have a lot of anime repertoire. Other than, like, I used to go to this club way back in the day, and they would play, like, hentai porn. That was, like, my first kind of, like, look into, like, anime.
Well, me and Ethan, like, we've been exposed to anime and manga for, like, a long time. Like, I got my first manga was, like, Inuyasha Volume 1 when I was, like, 10.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a long-standing thing. Saw Spirited Away in theaters when it came out, and then we, like, yeah, dove into all that shit later on when I was in middle school and high school.
Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon to mainstream.
Yep. I'm not a huge fan, no. I'm not going to front.
My favorite anime. I did get wrapped up in Pokemon for a little bit.
My favorite anime is Neon Genesis Evangelion. And Ethan is way more into anime than me. I can't front and be like, we're equal. Ethan loves his fucking anime. I will watch an anime that intrigues me once every few months. But I have a huge respect for it. I'm sorry?
Akira?
Yeah, I love Akira. I saw that my adoptive dad had a VHS of it when we got adopted.
Yeah, I watched the VHS, and I remember as a kid, I remember watching it going like, what the fuck is
that's
going on?
My reaction as well. Being a little, I remember I think my mom was very mad that he showed that to us.
Yeah.
Because we were very little.
So was he like your, I mean...
Oh, he was like, he's definitely been...
As far as culture and
shit. Yeah, huge inspiration to me. He introduced me to so many things, like giving me like Batman the Killing Joke when I was a kid, like showing me like Frank Miller. He's an artist himself. So that's what he's a creative director for a living for all
these. Like, what age group is your dad in?
He's 50. No. Yeah, he's 54.
That's pretty young.
Yeah. My mom is 44. My dad is 54.
Hey, there you go. That's how I like it. We're big on that too. Not really on that. I shouldn't say big on that. That's bad to say out loud. But anyway,
but yeah, he was a huge influence on me. Everything he showed me growing up is molded me into like who I am. Of course, I took what he gave me and kind of like moved into my own direction.
Right. But he gave you kind of like
gave me the starting.
You probably didn't grow up listening to the fucking radio.
Yeah. Other than that, I mean, like my mom was also into. I mean, my mom's young, so she was also showing me all kinds of cool shit and stuff. So in my family, it would have been very hard to like grow up being a normie.
Yeah,
because everyone's just weird.
I can get that. Yeah, I mean, like, it's cool to have someone like that, especially in your life. And it could be, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be a parent. Like, my uncle would show me a bunch of, like, cool music shit when I was younger, too.
So. Yeah, I mean, even, like, when I was, like, at that collective, I remember just learning so much from the older members because they just all had so much to share that I never even thought of, you know? Mm-hmm. It's, like, telling me, showing me zines, telling me all this, like, political theory that, like, as, like, you know, a 16, 17-year-old, I would never have thought about.
Right. Right. Do you guys carry zines? I know that you wanted to. Do you guys carry zines with you on tour still?
Or? No, we've never. I've been way too fucking broke. My dream was to like build out of wood a nice shelf like we used to have at Che and carry zines, but I've never gotten around to it. I would still like to make it happen.
Yeah.
Actually, I will make it happen.
And what would your ideal catalog be of like
it would depend on like the tourists, because like I'm very much one of those people that understands like you have to know the audience you're like going to. So I would probably, you know, have like some zines on like Emma Goldman or like basic intro to leftist politics.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a lot of stuff on like the oppression of the working class, because I feel like that's something that a lot of people can identify with. Even if you're not like hardcore left, you can identify with being fucked over
right
in the workplace.
Right.
And by like you know, or corporate overlords or whatever. So stuff like that, I definitely wouldn't go in there with the zines that we used to have at Che, because a lot, some of that shit's a little bit too extreme for like the intro level kid,
right?
Just learning about this stuff. They don't need to know how to make riot gear.
Yeah, I see. No anarchist cookbook. No,
because that's just a bad recipe for disaster. For
well, I remember like going to some like these shows and like PETA being like, you know, it was a lot of, it was a big thing for PETA to be there at these at shows for the most part.
And PETA's whack as fuck. But
well,
back
I mean, like
in the
this.
Day,
I mean, I don't want to agree or disagree with that, but this was also like 2000 to 2004 time.
They were a little bit better back then, yeah.
But they were. It was also like so in your face. Some of the
it,
stuff
it is
so in your face,
and I feel like that approach doesn't work. It's a great in theory, and like I'm all for being aggressive in your politics.
There's like a fine line.
There is a fine line. I mean, like Sea Space Cowboys is an all vegan band.
Really?
Yeah, we're all vegan. But we're not super in your face about it. I would carry zines about veganism for sure. Mm-hmm. And if anybody would ever want to talk about it, I'd be like, yeah, this is why you should be vegan.
I actually reached out to Mean Pete to see if I should ask you anything in particular, but he was like, yeah, it's just cool band, cool people. It's all good. So, yeah. You're the second vegan we've had on here. At least, like, outspoken, not outspoken vegan, but just, like, mentioned it on the podcast.
Yeah, but... Yeah, I definitely keep it intro level because I understand that if anything, if I were to be dealing with any hardcore leftists, I'm preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
And I don't really need to do that. It doesn't help anybody.
I mean, I don't, and again, it could be I'm a product of my environment, but there's not really a lot of like, and I feel like people that would vote for the right may not listen to like hardcore music that much.
Yeah, I mean, they're few and far between. Very
I feel
much
like they're
so.
Just more like a five-finger death punch crowd.
Thing. And that would be the thing with like with this band, with our politics. Like, yeah, we used to be way more outspoken about them. We used to be very outspoken about our anarcho-communist politics and shit like that. Not so much anymore. It's more just the personal members hold that near and dear because we're not, you know, we're singing sad songs now. It's not so much about that as
the world
it used
sucks.
To be. But we still hold our politics close to us, and so if anything, I would want to try to push those who already have those ideas a bit further and be like, hey, I know that you think this, but have you ever considered taking a step forward with this?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Stick to Your Guns is a very outspoken band politically, and it's been really cool to watch them do their speeches every night, and it's been great talking to them because we do have similar politics, and it's great to have another band in the hardcore scene that we can like really like talk to about these things.
Yeah,
like we've read the same
books.
It's also
an older band too. They've been around.
Yeah, and they're amazing band.
They paved the way a little bit.
Yeah,
for something like that.
And I would love to push the hardcore scene towards that idea more, the more far left. But it's a process. I know that nobody's going to just pick up a zine and be like, oh my God, I'm a fucking hardcore leftist. I am an anarcho-syndicalist.
But that does happen too, though.
It has happened, yeah. But a lot of people also are extremely turned off by that stuff. So it's like this weird line you walk of like, I want to radicalize people, but I have to do it in the right way because it can scare the fuck out of people if you just come out and be like, yo.
Here's some fucking baby cows getting fucking grind up.
Yeah.
That's what I was like. I'd be like, oh, what kind of merch do you have? Oh, that's cool. I'm going to move over here to this booth. Oh.
Yeah. It's a process.
Yeah.
It's not a problem. Nothing against those people. Some people take longer to come around. They need more to learn more, and they don't need to be bombarded with Emma Goldman's essays on anarchism right away.
Do you feel like the younger generation is becoming more privy to that stuff at an earlier age?
I feel like the younger generation is way more left and liberal. But I don't know. I can't speak about how far left they go.
Right.
You know, I know
they're becoming like attuned to that.
Yeah,
those
I feel
kind
like
of topics.
They'd be way more receptive to it. But there's also a huge movement of nonviolence right now, which is like why I like try really hard to separate myself from liberals, because there is this while there's this rhetoric of left, there's this rhetoric of oh no, Antifa bad, oh no, Black Bloc bad, we can't be violent, and I try to really separate myself from that. So it's kind of a toss-up. I don't know who would be receptive to more like we need a revolution versus who just be like, oh no, I'm just a liberal, I'm left.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not right. I'm not a centrist.
It's definitely a weird, there's so many, like, sects now
there
in
is.
Either side.
And, you know, I've actually had really good conversations with people about that because there's a lot of separation in the left. And I was talking to somebody about how, yeah, I don't necessarily agree with some of the beliefs of, like, these separate sections of, like, the far left, but I do believe that we need unity because at the current state, we need to work together as much as possible because while our outcomes might not be the same, we can still take the same steps forward to fight a system that we need to fight currently.
Yeah, and go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
And that's something that I believe is necessary. We can argue about our differences later. Right now, we need unity to continue the march forward instead of just fighting amongst ourselves.
Yeah, and much like we talked about prior to this fucking podcast starting up, was like the, we touched on the cancel culture type thing and how, you know, I don't know. I'm not about the cancel. I mean, we already talked about it. I'm not about the cancel culture that much. I feel like what you said earlier, people that need to learn from their mistakes rather than be like chastised or this or the other.
Yeah, a lot of it stems from like outcasting someone should be the last fucking straw. You should always strive for accountability and make that person learn because the more people that you outcast, the less you have fighting for you. And it also even like you can even go deeper with it in that like if you're a leftist and you talk about workers' rights, but you won't let a worker join your group because they're uneducated about or they say derogatory terms, you're not helping anyone. Mm-hmm. You need to be willing to take them in and educate them instead of just being like, oh, you said a slur, fuck off. Get out of here. You need to be able to take them in and be like, here's why you shouldn't say things like that because they perpetuate this subspecies ideology that's oppressed people for a long time. You need to be willing to be like, I am trying to fight your battle with you, but I need you with me as well.
Right.
And educate them instead of ostracizing them.
And not going back on their timeline 10 years to find out.
Yeah, exactly. That doesn't help anyone. That kind of thing is counterproductive. You need to be willing. It's all about education. It's all about progress. So, yeah, if somebody does something, says a slur, says something that they might not necessarily know is bad, you need to educate them and be like, this is why it's bad. Are you good? You're accountable for your actions? Okay, cool. I mean, of course, it becomes a different story with like violent offenders and
rapists.
Right, you know, that's
a
whole different
beast. We're talking
about
like regular people.
Yeah, we're talking about just people
to have a conversation.
Who like somebody who doesn't know that it's a slur to call me a tranny. I'm like, you know, I need to educate that person instead of just being like, oh, you call me a tranny, get the fuck out.
Right.
You know. That being said, if it's clearly malicious, we're going to have problems.
Yeah, how often does it happen when it's not malicious? I feel like it would probably happen a lot when
it hasn't happened to me. I've heard of people talking to people and being like, oh, they didn't know that is not okay to say. But I've never had to deal with it said to me. But it's the same thing with like a lot of people don't know that, you know, transvestite is a slur and we don't say that anymore. A transsexual isn't correct, you know. So there is a process of learning and there's a lot of fucking.
What is the correct term?
Transgender.
Transgender?
Yeah. There's a lot of.
Would trans be a.
Trans is fine.
Okay, yeah, that's what I usually.
Nobody wants to say transgender all the time. Say trans. But there is a lot of. And that's another thing. There's a lot of vocabulary that's changed. There's a lot of ideology that's changed. And not everybody can keep up with it. Mm-hmm. And you need to be willing to be patient and educate people instead of ostracizing them. Because then you just create more of a dynamic where, like, all these people are this group over here and they're ostracized.
Yeah, separate.
It doesn't do good. It's like within the queer movement even, we have our own little group over here. But we really shouldn't. We should be working to be integrated into society and make it normal and stop doing things that isolate ourselves. It should be all about education and integration.
Right.
So that we can just be normal. Because I don't want to be viewed as special or different. All I want to be viewed as is normal.
Right.
Because that's all I am. I am normal. Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm a trans woman. Yeah, I have to deal with things that are differently than the average woman does, but I just want to be viewed as normal.
I mean, it's normal for me because I met you like this. So it's normal.
That's the thing. It's like, it's just, everything's a process.
I have a question about the transition and music. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't know, like, what your end goal is, maybe, or where you are at in your whole situation, but are you worried about, like, it affecting your vocal dynamic and shit?
No, because there's no... Because
on the record, you just... In the record that just came out, you do have, like...
Yeah, I do lower vocals. I don't do as many high-pitched vocals. But no, because no surgery will affect your vocal range.
Okay.
Nothing medically will affect
you. I didn't know does happen.
That's all voice training.
This. Okay.
And shit. That's how I'm able to do those high-pitched vocals back in the day. But I can still do my lower stuff that I do on the record. All the talking.
A lot of people, when I was in a band, a lot of people asked, like, how do you scream? And this and the other.
Yeah.
And
it's just like... It's all voice work. I mean, Laura Jane Grace sounds the fucking same. She didn't change her voice. It's all personal preference. Some people don't change their voice at all. Some people work very hard to.
Yeah, I was wondering because, like, again, people that go through transitions and people that just, you know, come out even sometimes adopt a different way of talking.
You do it. You do whatever's comfortable for you.
I didn't know if that maybe was like a medical thing.
No, it's not. I mean, when I first came out, I tried talking in a higher pitched voice, blah, blah, blah. I didn't like it. Okay. So I was like, I'm going back to my normal voice. This is way too much work to just always talk higher pitched and be like this. I'm like, I'm back.
That's pretty funny. That's an interesting look on it.
It is. I mean, and that's like the thing. Also, like, within transitions, everybody's is different. Some people will never get on hormones, will never go through any surgeries, and they're completely content. Mm-hmm. And that's chill for them. And me, I want surgeries. I've been on hormones for years. Everybody's transition is different.
Yeah. Well, it's like
whatever makes you comfortable.
Yeah. It's like the journey.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any, you can just tighten it if it's bothering you. Yeah. Do you have anything else you want to say before, or get at, like, plug or whatever? Whether it's a band or
I'm trying to get to these comments, my dude.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do the comments. I don't have anything else. Like I said, I like conversation.
Yeah, man. It's been a good, let me say, yeah, man.
Okay. I grew up in Cali. Yeah. Bro, dude, man.
I'm a bro, dude.
I get it. Yeah. It's fine. It doesn't bother me. I grew up in Southern California.
Like, all the time.
A lot of people come up to me and are like that. I'm like, you gotta understand, I grew up in a surfer town.
I feel
I don't give a fuck.
But I also am conscious enough to be around.
No,
it's
good.
You know,
no, because
like,
some
people are like, I'll say it, but I'm like, oh, yeah, no.
Some people do care, and it's good that you're careful.
Yeah.
Me, I don't give a fuck.
Okay, cool.
Canceled.
Yeah, don't cancel me, bro. Or, whatever. Okay, we'll end it now, I guess. And then you can check out Connie at CU Space Cowboy. Your Instagram, not your personal Instagram, unless you want to give it out.
I'll give out my personal Instagram.
Yeah,
it's X Camu Love Child X.
And what's the band's? It's like CU Space Cowboy
SYSC Band. Yeah.
Okay. And then, we'll have it all linked in the bottom and everything. Yep. Well, I appreciate you coming on, man.
Of course.
It's good. Yeah. We're good.
Yeah. Chill.
Hey, everyone. This is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week, I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course, provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.